on Audio, the podcast for writers and all who are interested in books, literature, and the printed word. Write on Audio is the weekly companion podcast of Write On magazine and the Write On suite of publications from Pen to Print. Subscribe by searching Pen to Print in your favourite podcast app to have new editions delivered to you each week. Write On Audio and friends, recommending podcasts you may enjoy. In this new Write On Audio feature, we'll share episodes of other writing podcasts that our listeners may enjoy. First, we're sharing an episode of The Writer's Gym, a weekly show about the process and practice of writing, featuring writer and writing coach, Dr. Rachel Knightley, alongside novelist and audio drama writer, Emily Inkpen. The Writer's Gym is presented by Write On Audio's producer, Chris Gregory.
Writer's Gym Podcast. Build creative confidence and grow your writing life with Rachel Knightley and Emily Inkpen. Welcome to the Writer's Gym Podcast with Rachel Knightley and Emily Inkpen. Hello.
Hello.
And today we are going to be talking about the art of giving feedback to your fellow writers. Now, Rachel and Emily, you both selected this topic, and I guess that means that you may have had some instances in which you asked for advice from another writer and didn't quite get what you were expecting.
Ooh, yeah, might have been.
Yeah.
Does it show?
I think we chose this because it's like a therapy session. Like,
there's a lot of that in there.
Yes.
I'm now able to joke about it, laugh about it. Learned a huge amount from what other people offer as feedback without knowing what kind of feedback you're asking for. I didn't always know that that was on me to make clear, and maybe that's something we're going to explore.
Yes, definitely. Hmm. Yeah.
And Emily, you've presumably had a similar instance where feedback wasn't quite what you were expecting, or
I've had experiences where I've given books thinking the person was just going to read it, and then I've had like a treatise back with them, you know, like, and I just gave it to them, you know, it's just, oh yeah, like, read my thing, and then they gave me feedback and I was like, oh, this was not what I thought would happen, but actually it turned out to be really useful, so I can't really complain, but that has happened. Yeah.
You've had free services you didn't know you'd applied for.
Exactly, yes. Exactly that.
So Rachel, from your instance, I'm sure we'll hear a little bit more about, have you recovered enough to talk about it?
Oh, absolutely. There was an epiphany moment, and I'm going to tell you the epiphany before I tell you the story.
Ooh.
It's a bit of a clue that the story isn't necessarily a happy one. But as I was listening to this person I respected telling me why I shouldn't be bothering to do this at all, and it really was, that was really the experience, I suddenly had this little thought that was actually a very big thought, which is, he's not bothered to say one thing positive about it. And suddenly in the middle of it all, I felt really, really free, because I realised that at no point with any student of any stage, with any coaching client, with any colleague, friend, there's never, not once in my 42 years on this planet, been a time there wasn't something you could say that was encouraging.
Mm-hmm.
And I realised a couple of things. One was that something in it had maybe gone against him in a quite a personal way that he wasn't quite acknowledging. Mm-hmm. And I'm not actually blaming him for that. I'm saying neither of us has said, what did I really need out of it? And he'd not said what the problem was. Now, what I really needed out of it, and I thought I'd explain this to him, but I clearly hadn't, was, here are some concepts that I feel like could be a thing, and I haven't managed to make those clear yet. Could you challenge me? Could you help me bring out what I mean? But what I got from him was, you haven't got there yet. It's all, I don't know what's there. And I knew that before I sent the damn thing to him.
Yeah.
So for me, what was enormously useful about that, and I'm making it sound like it didn't hurt, it was somebody I respected enormously. It was a very difficult situation, profoundly upset me, shook me. But the brain bit that was still, you know, doing its brainy thing, went, I can see what's happened here. Next time around, objectives, objectives, objectives. What do I want out of it?
Yeah.
That allows me to know if they're the person to give it to me or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. So with these instances in mind, and I'm sure we'll hear more through the course of this podcast, I want to think about a few ways in which we would like to receive feedback from our peers. Emily, could you start us with a couple of thoughts on the way you give feedback to others or the way you like to receive feedback?
Sure. Yeah, so really my biggest example is it was a friend who asked me for feedback. Now, I've worked as a copywriter in agency before, and that was my only experience of receiving feedback at this point. In an agency environment, you don't have time to be nice. You don't have time to suggest. You don't have time to, you know, say, have you thought of it like this? Maybe think of it like that. The feedback that you get is brutal because you've got a client waiting.
Mm.
Your time is being billed by the hour, and they notoriously undercharge and, you know, underestimate the amount of time it's actually going to take to do the tasks. So the feedback you get is weak, this word instead of that one. Is this true? Have you referenced this? Blah, blah, blah. It's incredibly blunt and to the point. And this friend of mine came to me and said, hey, could you give me some, like, you know, feedback on this? And I went through their story like that. And it was blunt. And it was, you know, it was exactly how I had received feedback myself in the past. Mm. I mean, it meant that I had an incredibly thick skin for feedback. I was used to just having my work pulled apart every single day in a really blunt way. And it didn't occur to me that that wouldn't be what she wanted.
Mm.
And it was like a line edit, you know, this sentence doesn't make sense. This thing doesn't feed on from that thing. Get rid of this. And all of these things. And like poetic language and saying, this is too thick. There's no way I'm going to, like, you know, nobody will understand this. Cut out these words. And all of this stuff, which, to be fair, I think I had decent points to make when it came to those things, but I went about it in completely the wrong way, and she didn't appreciate it much, I think, is the take-home point there. And yeah, I mean, since then I learned basically that what I was capable of doing feedback-wise was too detailed for a lot of people. I'm more of a final line edit feedback person than I am a initial alpha beta reader. You know, when you need to give a broader step back, I like what you've done here, I can see where you're going with this stuff. I'm much more in the, what are these words doing? Yeah. This is, you know, this is an interesting choice, doesn't really go with the flow here, and stuff like that. Mechanics, yeah, almost.
And,
yeah,
and Rachel, what I mean, you've been asked to give feedback a lot in your role as a writing coach.
And as a copywriter and as an editor. And I think what, particularly with my nightmare moment as well, really does come across there is it is on both parties to say what I'm looking for is.
Yes.
Or more importantly, it's on those of us who know what the problems can be. Not to say, I'll give this, but to ask, what do you want? And I've got a little clap emoji next to those four words in my notes, because it's a bit like with a plot or a synopsis. It's what clap happens. You know, it's being clear. It's the same thing in real life that you need to say. For example, right now I'm working on the novel that I thought I was writing before I met my last editor and did two short story collections. And I've come back to this novel, and I'm different to how I was last time. And what I need to do is get through it, get to the end of it. So what I need right now is intelligent enthusiasm from the readers who are the natural readers for it.
Yeah.
But also those tend to be, when I pick them, they be people who can say, you've missed a word there. You think you've said the thing, but actually you've talked around the thing. I don't know what the thing is, which can happen when you know something too well. And at that stage, that when you let it be is a celebratory stage. That's when I do my beta readers. I have a writing coach, just as every therapist has a therapist. You do that. and I will come to that person at that time, and then I will do my agent submission, and I'm going to go through that process. But I'm now much more aware that these different horses for courses, you know, these different stages are important for their own reasons.
Yeah.
And most of all, because I've worn these different hats, thank God I now know, are they looking for a writing coach, which was what I was looking for in that person I'm not naming. I was looking for somebody to say, Kimon, I can see that this is in there.
Yeah.
I can see that that's in there. Or if you can't, could you tell me more about what's in there? And we'll get to a point where I see it, because you're on their side. The problem is when you get someone who's not a writing coach, who is, let's say, I won't say what he was, but somebody whose job is to receive these things and get them into the world, usually quite rapidly, he's in a completely different mindset.
Yeah.
And what he's looking for is something that makes sense to him in that context. So I see all of that now, but of course you don't at the time. So this is why I think it's on all of us to say, what are you looking for? To make sure that both people know what's happening. Like in any relationship, it's only as good as the communication.
And I think that it can be, for me, it was really horrible being in that position where I knew that I'd done it wrong. And I didn't give any feedback for a long time after that, because I was like, I did damage. And I don't know how to not do damage. Like, I haven't got enough experience of doing this stuff to be trusted, basically, with people's work after that. So not only did I overstep on the feedback there, but I also really knocked my own confidence of being able to be the supportive person that I thought I was going to be, you know.
For the record, after my thing happened, it took me several years before I could even talk about it. I'm talking about it in a certain way now because it's longer ago, and because it always makes me feel better when something unpleasant can be channeled into something that makes things easier for other people. So in my head, this now feels a lot better for that reason. It definitely wasn't immediate. And hearing you say that, it does for me go, you've clearly got the important life lesson from that, which is to know that there are different kinds. The fact that we're having this conversation means you are going to be a safer person to do it next time, because you are going to know what questions to ask and know what questions other people aren't thinking to ask, so that you can be a bit more helpful in that. But it would be understandable, but a shame, and definitely not necessary, to think, I can't do this, because this is how we learn to do things we couldn't do last time.
Yeah, I just wish I didn't have to learn the hard way every time. I kind of wish there was, you could learn things the soft way. I like learning things the soft way, not the hard way. Yeah. That's a better way.
With my guitar teacher, I always do a this doesn't count run. And I used to do that in theatre as well, and I do that with my Lambda exam students now with any performance. In a way, I do it with the warm-ups in the writer's gym as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's saying, right, this doesn't count, or what the hell, we're just going to see what happens.
Yeah.
And in a way, I'd probably argue that starting with feedback, certainly for people who are new to it, there's got to be some element of that, because you don't learn unless you get things wrong.
Yeah.
If you're in an environment of, I have to get this right, then you're already wrong in creative terms, because it's those risks that are the discoveries. You don't get discovery without risk. You don't get anything if you're too narrow about what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm such a big believer in the opportunity and the crisis. You know, we get the opportunities we need, not necessarily the ones we want.
Yeah.
But I would happily say to you, if I wanted your opinion of something, I would happily say to you, Emily, I'd like your opinion on this specific thing. I'm asking you because of this specific reason.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Please, will you do this specific thing? And you would either say sure or can't, because I'm busy. And it's that specificity. It's when it's a sort of general, please read my mind, that we're all going to get in trouble, aren't we?
It's like, I just want feedback on this. What kind of feedback? Yeah. I just want feedback on this. Tell me, just be honest. So dangerous.
You can hear the alarm sirens everywhere.
Well, now I can. Back then, I was just like, okay, I'll be honest. Yeah. No.
So when you're thinking that you're writing whatever you're working on, is at a point where you are ready to seek some feedback, is it more important to go to someone who you admire for their craft, or someone you trust?
I went to someone I admire who was a completely different kind of writer to me, mm-hmm. with a different project, I subsequently realised that why I did that was fundamentally self-esteem free, which was, this person is a really good writer, therefore what they say goes at some level, and actually, genre-wise, and other stuff, interests, gender, I'm being stereotypical, but I think it sometimes it does come into it.
Definitely, yeah.
Other things, I was writing about something that was very far from that person's life experience. Mm. And in doing that, the decision I made for myself was, watch out for that, because I respect that person, I trust that person, and I know that they're going to know the difference between something good that isn't for them, mm-hmm. and something that doesn't know what it is yet. I know they're going to know that difference, and that is an important kind of feedback in itself. But at the same time, there's no reason I can't ask what I would do now, which is people who are more the reader that I'm working towards, and I know to prioritize that now. Whereas when you're new, it can just be, you know, ooh, a writer, mm-hmm. I will ask them. It's not illogical, but it can limit what you receive back.
Mm. Yeah, I think I've had all sorts of feedback. I'm a great believer in getting my work out reasonably early in alpha readers, beta readers. I don't believe in doing 7 or 8 complete drafts before sending it out. I've worked a lot in tech and tech startups, and you need to get it out into user testing early to get the best result. I mean, there's a reason Baldur's Gate 3 is amazing, and it's because it's been in early access since 2020. Mm. And, you know, they have been getting feedback from players for years before they released.
And one of the reasons for that in, you know, in tech or in writing, is that you don't go too far off the right track, I guess.
Exactly. You know, like, you're so far in it that you could end up editing out gold because you can't even see that it's gold anymore. Mm. And, you know...
Or continuing to write, you know, in inverted commas, rubbish.
Yeah.
And not having been told to get back on.
See, I would quibble with that, because I don't believe we ever do anything without there being something underneath it. I believe we don't know what the hell it is.
Mm.
But I would be really careful about even jokingly saying about oneself, let alone even the concept, that it's rubbish, because it isn't. There is something under there, and that was why I've told you both personally that I went away from a particular kind of writing, because I felt so slapped on the wrist that I'd dared to ... You know, I needed to recover from that. I don't believe there is such a thing as rubbish. Can I just come back on something?
Yeah, sure.
It might be worth going over how you would define alpha reader, beta reader, because what I've noticed is, just like some people will define what is a second, third, 27th draft in different ways, it might be nice to do that.
Yeah, sure. So, yeah, I mean, I believe in getting into alpha and beta reader early. When I say about alpha reader, I mean, I've done a first draft, I've got a first draft, I've gone back over, I've maybe done a couple of runs through, tidying it up, making sure that it's got a structure. I do certain tests, like make sure that the structure is there. I do a retrospective traffic light test, heat mapping, making sure that the structure of it, in terms of, like, you outline all the chapters and then you make a colour chart of where the tension is in the story. And as long as you've got mostly green at the beginning and mostly red at the end, you know that you're on a reasonably good track in terms of, you know, building up the story and then resolution. And then I send it to first batch of readers and I say, okay, alpha readers, this is in rough shape. Do I have something here? Is it a book? Mm. You know? And then they come back and they say, yes, it's a book. You know, these things stood out to me. These things didn't. Was any of it inconsistent? Were there moments where the characters did something that disturbed you? Then whatever they say, I can be like, well, I did that on purpose, so that's fine. Or I did that there. If they say that there was something that was particularly jarring, if they say there's something, you know, then you can smooth those things out in the subsequent draft. Like, this is your rough wood before you get sanding. And it's like, okay, is this a shelf basically? Yes, it's a shelf. Okay, now I shall sand the shelf, and then I shall, you know, I shall treat the shelf, and then, you know, I guess, yeah, like, you know, applying for agents and doing all of that is the getting it on the wall, you know. But first off, I've got to know if this is a shelf.
And there's Something else that I'm sure we've all seen happen is that people can give themselves excuses to start sanding too soon.
Yes.
And then they want feedback on their sanding.
Yeah.
But if you've only got a couple of chapters and the rest of the shelf isn't even there yet,
yeah,
then however good you're sanding, you're kind of slightly eating into your own time, because by the time you have that whole shelf, you might decide a different kind of sanding is what's needed for that shelf. Yeah.
You might be going against the grain.
Oh, well done. Oh,
yeah. Nicely done.
Or using, to use an actual carpentry phrase, going against the grain. You might be going against your own grain.
Yeah.
So I believe in getting it into alpha readers, and then I believe there's definitely a phase.
So how would you... Who for you is alpha reader, beta reader? How do you define the difference?
I define the difference, okay, so alpha reader are normally close people who I trust with very early work, who I know and who will say, yes, Emily, this is a shelf. And yes, they won't, they'll be reading it. I know they won't judge me. I'm not putting myself out into the wider world where people might be like, she doesn't know what she's doing. I mean, these people know that I know what I'm doing. They just, it's that kind of thing. Then beta readers, slightly wider net. People who I know are like the target audience, but who are slightly removed and will be able to say, I didn't get this bit. And I didn't get that bit, and didn't really necessarily vibe with it, we'll be able to give more distanced feedback.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean.
Do you think there's ever a danger that when you know that that's going to be your process, that at some point you will put it out to alpha reader or beta reader? Do you ever think that you're writing for that person? Is that a pitfall that you could potentially fall into, do you think?
Mm. Ooh.
I've silenced you.
Can I tell you why I don't?
Yes.
Okay. For me, it's a bit like when I'm working on public speaking with clients or theatre speech particularly. I will have my ideal audience, and sometimes that's one person. Usually it's three spread out. And I pick people who are friends, but generally who are friends who are in that interest bracket, and usually friends who are slightly better at it than me. So with theatre particularly, there's a couple of friends that I worked with for years, and I always picture them because they are lovely people. I feel very safe and supported by them. I know they're absolutely rooting for me, but they're also both better actors than me. And I felt... really sort of safe, but also like I want to give it my best. I feel like I can take risks safely, if you see what I mean. Mm-hmm. That you can never take risks safely, but I feel very comfortable. I want to do my best. I want to play. I want to reach out.
Mm-hmm.
And having them in my head is great. Now, you can have those people in your head even when they're in the cast with you. They can be on stage with you. You can still have them out there as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's the power of imagination. We make the rules. I do that with speaking. I've realised that that can work with writing too. What I do know, and I see with MA students, I see with professionals, I see in so many ways all the time, we can all at any stage fall into, I have to do this right mode.
Mm-hmm.
And it shuts you down.
Yeah.
And you start trying to prove how good or intelligent or capable or creative you are, rather than be curious, listen to the story, think about what the story needs and follow it.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that I stop myself from that is just purely notice it. Notice you're doing it and find what's fun again. So, mm-hmm. for example, with the novel I've just come back to, if I have a reader in my mind, they are my beta readers because they are people who like that world.
Mm-hmm.
They're not necessarily more experienced writers in this particular case, but for me that's kind of irrelevant. It's more about they're interested in the world, they'll enjoy the story, and I know they won't be afraid to tell me, and we'll go on to the John Cleese rules soon, because I go by the John Cleese rules. They will not be afraid to tell me what didn't work for them.
Mm. Mm.
Exactly, yeah, that's what you need. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, an example, I think for me, when I've submitted or shared drama scripts with people, first of all, I think there is a huge element of trust.
Mm.
I think your point about working with people who are slightly better than you is a really good one in all fields of life, actually. It's the way we improve. The gap is small but noticeable,
and we
have something to attain.
They say that if you're the smartest person in the room, change rooms, don't they?
If you're the smartest person in the room, change rooms is quite interesting. But the great thing about most rooms is in some ways you'll be the smartest or the most useful, and in other ways somebody else will be the smartest and most useful. And one of the best things about feedback and dealing with imposter syndrome, actually, is when you realise that everyone else is just as nervous as you are and is aware so much more of what they feel like they've got wrong than what they feel they're getting right. Mm-hmm. And that's why collaboration and meeting new people and all of that is such a wonderful thing. And the writing world really does offer that. You just need to keep reaching out, being prepared to listen and share. Mm. And it's fabulous.
Yeah. I've noticed that a really good kind of starting point for giving feedback, and this particularly applies to audio drama scripts, is to start by focusing on a few technical points. So in audio drama, maybe you should introduce that character a bit better, say their name a couple of times. And so that feels like someone more experienced than me in that medium is giving me a bit of advice in that medium. That then makes me go, oh, great, thank you. Mm-hmm. Because that's really useful technical advice. And I think it then paves the way for them to say things like, I didn't really believe that character, which are not technical, they're about my writing. Mm-hmm. But I'm more open to receiving them because of that gentle way in that they took.
Yeah, and this is something that as we get more experienced, we need to keep reminding ourselves, is sometimes that's exactly what somebody needs. That's the diving board that makes the dive fun for them, is knowing a few safety points, like times you introduce characters, how many per scene. I mean, you'll give better examples than me, Chris, but having a few things so that you can comfortably flesh it out. If you know which way up the skeleton goes, you can have more fun fleshing the thing out.
Mm. I was feeding back on a script recently and it was exit this person, and then 3 lines later they said something.
Ouch.
And I said, are they in the room? Are they here? Are they not? And it's so easy to do when you're like in it and you're telling the story and you've forgotten that you've exited the room. And I think, you know, following people like Adrian Tchaikovsky, who's very open about their editing process and will very openly, you know, make fun of himself on Twitter, which is a joy. And he's saying, you know, I've just edited a scene where the character stood up 3 times but never sat down. And you know, it's so easy to do.
That reminds me of the example when you were alpha listening my sound design once, and I had a character leave the room and their voice went one way and their feet went the other.
Yes.
And your comment was, have they got a really long neck?
I said, they've either got a really long neck or we've got to sort this out.
And I think that probably leads us on to another point, in that if you are giving criticism with humour, it's a lot easier to take.
Yeah.
Although that is very, very dependent on who you're talking to.
And know your audience.
Your relationship with the person. Yeah. And
being so clear on objectives, because how I joke or tease or don't, or how what to one person might be clipped or glib is simply efficient to another.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And there are different writers that I coach and that I've worked with where if I were to swap styles around, it would not work at all, that it's very much a relationship. And I'm not saying everyone has to be a writing coach in order to have these relationships. You don't.
No.
But you do, if you want it to be really good, the relationship, have to know to ask what they want, what they expect.
Yeah.
And you listen and you notice things about how they communicate, because it really is all communication in the end.
Yeah. I think one of the things, I mean, I did want to sort of say, is that if you are giving feedback, when I'm receiving feedback, any time, like I've got feedback, this needs improving, this needs improving, or like that's what I'm hearing in my head. And then they'll say, I really like this. And it's like a, and it's like a break. I think it's so important to also highlight the things that you love. Mm. Highlight the bits that make you go, ooh. Highlight the sentences that are just beautiful and say, that was beautiful. Always make sure that you also feed back on what works. Mm. Because also what might happen is that in the editing process, they'll take, or at least I will potentially take something that's a comment earlier and then apply it to something that is gold and take it out.
Yeah.
And then someone will look at it and say, well, why did you take that sentence out? That was beautiful. And I was like, and then I'm like, but I didn't know it was beautiful. You didn't tell me it was beautiful. You know, like that bit. Mm. And I think we need to give each other a break, basically. We need to encourage and we need to, as much as feedback and,
This is not a feedback point, but it leads absolutely from that, which is save your drafts.
Yeah, indeed. Yep.
And
be able to return if you need or want.
Yeah.
And date them, time them within dates. One of the things that we sometimes do in the audio drama world, which I think is from the film world, is to give them colours, which somehow makes them easier to white draft, green draft, blue draft, or whatever.
Well, it meant that on set you could easily look around and make sure that everyone had a green draft.
It's got the same copy.
Did you always use the same series of colours?
There is an order.
There is an order.
White, blue, pink, yellow, green, goldenrod, buff, salmon, cherry, tan, ivory, white, this time known as double white, and black to blue, or double, which is then double blue. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, I'm guessing that by the time you've got to sort of like ivory and white, I mean, how many drafts is that? And you're on set and
you've had to do that many drafts. It probably wasn't that great a script.
I mean,
you've
really
place.
Got to think, you know, if I'm on set at the white stage and we're right back to white again. So
you've either got a lot of money or...
I think the main ones...
She's not a common problem.
The main ones have got to be white, blue, pink, yellow, green.
Yeah.
And yeah.
It is a good trick for drafts, but I think more on that in a future podcast.
Yeah.
I want to, I mean, we've talked a little bit there about nice ways of giving feedback.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to give you a dilemma here. You're asked for feedback from a fellow writer. You read their thing that they've asked you to give them feedback on, and you hate it. How do you go about responding?
I have that story.
Go for it.
Well, okay, yeah. So we were chatting about this just before recording, and so it came up. So basically there was this, I was watching a documentary about Playboy, and there was this young woman who had appeared in it absolutely naked, and her grandmother saw this on publication, and she said to her grandmother, "So what did you think?" And the grandmother said, "Well, your hair looked lovely."
Yeah.
And I enjoyed that story, aside from the obvious reasons, because what she'd done is what I would want to do in this situation, which is where you can be truthful and kind at the same time, to do so.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think kind means lying, but I also think that separating I didn't like it from is it trying to do what it's trying to do is where I would go with this. Now, because it is my job to give actual marks to work in the university system, which is not how I would actually ever think when I'm coaching and doing most of my professional life, it is something I have to be extra clear on, is that what I see my job as always is to get any piece of work closer to where it is trying to get to.
Mm-hmm.
That is my job. I'd reframe it, essentially. I do reframe it, not as I didn't like it, let alone my opinion of it is a fact about it, because that is never true, no matter how experienced you are, and people would do really well to remember that, is that if it's a genre or a thing of some kind that just isn't for me, but it's doing what it's meant to be doing, great, let me not like it, brilliant, we're all humans. If, on the other hand, I can't see what it's trying to do, which was the thing that I sent to that person that I told you about earlier, you know, I knew back then that it wasn't there, it wasn't speaking what it was trying to speak. I wanted him to help me find a way to get it to. And I didn't communicate that clearly enough because I didn't know to communicate that clearly enough. But now I'm in a position where I know that that is how I can help somebody. So I try to say one specific thing if they've asked for it. And if they haven't asked for it, I'll say, yay, hello, how are you? How did you feel it went?
Uh-huh.
And I will ask more and more questions that quite often gets people to say everything you could have said, but in their own language. Mm. And I think reframing it also away from I have to say something to I can help the artist facilitate process for them is a really good way around, because in the end, it's not about you, it's about them.
Mm.
It's about their development.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I would say, yeah, that, all of that, if you really have to, you know, they're really pressing you, just sort of keep it to the things that are good, that you did enjoy. Because, as you mentioned earlier, there is always something that is positive in what someone's done.
Or what they could do if they're guided.
Exactly. There is always something positive to say. Even if it's like, I really liked what you did with that character. The character might be in a whole situation that just wasn't for you, but you can appreciate that that character stood out and was brilliant in the way they were portrayed. You know, you could be like, you know, that was a very strong twist.
Mm.
It didn't twist in the way you necessarily wanted it to twist, or you think could have been, you know, it could have been more powerful. Or,
but the twist had impact.
But the twist had impact.
Yeah.
You like the twist. You know, there are things that you can say. It's the, your hair looked lovely. It's, you know, it's that, it's that truthful.
We're not asking which hair.
Exactly. You know, you can definitely focus on the good, honestly.
Yeah. Well, we're coming towards the end of this podcast now, and I want to move on to thinking about advice and feedback that we've received. And I think particularly good examples of that, because I think we should end on a positive note. So, Rachel, what's some really good advice or feedback you've received?
It was by Ariel Fisher when she was deputy editor of Fangoria magazine, and it was, say the thing. Whenever it's not happening, it's because we're trying to be clever, interesting, give the editor our money's worth, show that we can do it well. Roll all of that into the bin. Say the thing you're trying to say. See if you've said it. Anything that isn't that can go. And you can interpret that in voice as well as substance. And it was so liberating. And it's so true in my wider coaching life as well, that when you say what your problem is and you reach out on it in life as well as on the page, everything goes better.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, I think I can just double down on that, really. I mean, as a copywriter, you're basically trying to get a message across in a very tight amount of space. It makes you incredibly economic in your language if you are in that environment. So, you know, a problem for a copywriter will be, we need this key message with this title involved, with this is the event and this is the call to action, and you have 12 words.
Mm.
And you have to get all of that information into 12 words. And yeah, it's a real problem. But the only way to do that is to be direct and to know what the message is that you want to get across and get there. Mm. And I mean, obviously, when you're writing prose, when you're writing a book, you've got more space.
Mm.
But having that discipline of being able to just be direct, get it on the page, and play as well. Because when you're a copywriter, you do 3 to 5 versions of that. You know, you need to get all of this done in 12 words. Okay, well, this is this version of that 12 words. This is that version of this 12 words. This is with the call to action up front. This is with the call to action at the end. You know, you have fun with it. And sometimes, if you're trying to say something specific in a chapter, do different versions of the same paragraph. have some fun with it,
mm.
play with it. Eventually, especially if you don't necessarily know what you're trying to say when you set out, but you know you've got to get somewhere, by the time you've done three versions, you know exactly what you're trying to say. Then it gets you places. And I think that there's a lot in that. But I've sort of learned those practices from everyone who's ever been my boss and colleague in agency copywriting environments. And, you know, I just have to, a lot of thanks to give for, you know, to all of those people, really.
Mm.
Excellent.
Well, I mean, I think that was a very positive thought to come towards the end of the podcast on, in terms of feedback and advice. So I think we're at that stage where we ask for final thoughts or any other business.
My final sort of point is going to be around giving and receiving feedback about traumatic material. So triggering things.
Mm.
If a reader, a beta reader, an alpha reader, flags something as triggering and you didn't think of it like that when you wrote it, going back with a flippant reply to them saying, oh, I didn't even think about that as traumatic, you know, yeah, sure, I'll do that, you may be dismissing their personal trauma. The reason they've recognised it might be because, for obvious reasons, they, you know, they recognise it.
Mm.
You don't know why that is. You don't know if your flippant response is going to potentially be triggering to them. It's almost like you're saying, I don't see your trauma. Mm. I didn't even register that as traumatic. I didn't even see that. And if the other person did, you know, there's a reason for it.
Mm.
If someone is saying, I think this is triggering, you need, you know, maybe have more emotional reaction to what's just happened, just be mindful of the fact that a person has considered it triggering for a reason.
Mm. Yeah.
And yes, be careful about how you respond to that.
Mm. And there are two very useful words there, which are thank you.
Yes.
I didn't realise that.
Mm.
I will think about that. But thank you rather than sorry.
Mm.
Because it's okay to have made a mistake or not notice something or any of the other things. Thank you for pointing it out. After all, that's why we're asking for feedback.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Excellent. Rachel, any final thoughts?
Oh, yes. They're not mine. They belong to John Cleese. It's a beautiful little book and it's called Creativity. It's got him and some ring-tailed lemurs on the front. I do love ring-tailed lemurs.
Sure.
It's not relevant, but it's very true.
It is a great cover.
They do, and you know how they meditate to get the sun? They sit like that, and the sun comes down, and they sit in the sun like Zen with their hands, little hands up. It's wonderful. Feel free to cut all of that. Or not. John Cleese did something enormously helpful for me, and I expect most people listening to this, which is he takes all of the overthinking that can be done around how we approach, who we approach, what we ask, what we don't ask, and he has diluted it into, or distilled it, he has distilled it into four questions that you ask. Where were you bored?
Mm-hmm.
Where could you not understand what was going on?
Mm-hmm.
Where did you not find things credible? Was there anything that you found emotionally confusing?
Mm.
I love that last one, and it may be a little more oblique, but in terms of emotionally, just didn't quite seem real, right, it, like it hadn't quite arrived yet to you. I think those are beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
What he says after this, and by the way, it's on pages 100 to 101 of Creativity. If you only take two pages out of any writing guide, these are pretty good ones. What he says about them is, once you have the answers to these, then you go away, decide how valid the problems are, mm-hmm. and fix them yourself. The people you have asked will probably suggest their solutions too. Ignore these completely.
Yes.
Smile. Look interested, thank them and leave.
Yep.
Because they have no idea what they're talking about. Unless they are writers themselves, then listen carefully. But at the end of the day, you and only you must decide which criticisms and suggestions you accept.
Absolutely, 100%.
Well, I mean, I think that's a great way to end the podcast, a very positive way.
Mm-hmm.
We will put links to things we've mentioned, including the John Cleese book, in the show notes for this podcast.
Because it's the writer's gym, and because I know everybody is raring to go and thinking, what's the exercise I pick from this episode? I just want to have a little encouragement moment to say, pick, say the thing
mm-hmm.
about anything you're doing or anything you haven't dared to do yet, and just see what happens on that page.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Rachel Knightley, Emily Ukpen, thank you very much.
Chris Gregory, thank you very much.
Thank you both.
Thank you for listening to the Writer's Gym podcast with Rachel Knightley, Emily Ukpen, and me, Chris Gregory. If you'd like to learn more about Rachel and the Writer's Gym, please go to rachelknightley.com. To find out more about Emily, please go to emilyinkpen.com. And for Chris, go to alternativestories.com. We'll print all these links and more in the show notes for this podcast. The Writer's Gym podcast is an Alternative Stories 2024 production for The Writer's Gym. Production, sound design and editing were by me, Chris Gregory.
Thank you to The Writer's Gym podcast for allowing us to share this episode. The voices you heard were Chris Gregory, Emily Ukpen and Dr. Rachel Knightley. You can listen to more episodes and subscribe to the podcast by searching for The Writer's Gym in your favourite podcast app. As usual, we'll share links in the show notes of this podcast so that you can listen and find out more. We're always delighted to read your contributions, so if you'd like to see your words in Write On or hear them on this podcast, please get in touch. We'll share this link and all others mentioned in today's podcast as part of our show notes. I've been Tiffany Clare, and you've been listening to Write On Audio. Write On Audio is produced by Chris Gregory, and it's an Alternative Stories production for Pen to Print. This podcast is supported using public funding by Arts Council England.